The Eddic poems are our main source for Old Norse mythology. But do we know, or how do we know, that they really are pre-Christian? After all, they were recorded more than 2 centuries after the conversion. In this episode, Haukur Þorgeirsson at Iceland's Árni Magnússon Institute will tell us about this. Everybody, I have with me here today Haukur Þorgeirsson.
Yeah, I'm a researcher, associate research professor at the Árni Magnússon Institute for Icelandic Studies in Reykjavík, Iceland.
That's good. I was thinking of asking you a bit, Haukur, about the dating of Eddic poetry, which I know you have worked on. And the reason for this is that the Eddic poems are our best sources for Old Norse mythology. But the problem is that they're only handed down to us in manuscripts, Icelandic manuscripts from the 13th century. So in principle, they could date from the 13th century. And that wouldn't be very good, of course, because if we were interested in pre-Christian beliefs. And it was customary for some time in the middle of the 20th century to argue that the Eddic poems actually were composed in the High Middle Ages. But now recently there's been considerable progress in the dating of the Eddic poems, and I would like you to tell us a bit about that, Haukur.
Yes, thank you. It's a question I'm very interested in. So, as you say, our main sources for the Eddic poems are manuscripts dating from the late 13th century and 14th century. So, and one point of view on this is that that's how old the sources are, and we can't trace them. We can trace these poems farther back than that. So, and as you say, that would make their use for pre-Christian religion or Old Norse mythology much more difficult. So, but if we look at this in a broader context, there's It is very typical, almost universal, for ancient and medieval texts to be preserved in manuscripts that are much younger than the poems or texts themselves. So this is the case pretty much universally with Greek and Roman texts from antiquity. So the Iliad and the Odyssey may date from the 7th century BC, but the oldest complete manuscripts we have are much, much younger, from the 10th or 11th century AD. We have some, and even the oldest fragments are hundreds of years younger than the poems are usually thought to be. So it's not at all a unique problem for the Norse sources that they are, the manuscripts may be younger than the poems themselves. So an even starker example is the Rig Veda in India, which is sort of traditionally dated to 1200 BC. So a very old collection of ritual poems, very religious poems, liturgical poems. And the oldest manuscript of those are dated from the 15th century and so on. So those were preserved in oral tradition for hundreds and even thousands of years, which is maybe sounds astonishing, but
before they were recorded.
Yeah, before they were even recorded. So we have centuries, many centuries of oral preservation, followed by further centuries of manuscript transmission, along with still ongoing oral transmission. And of course, there are still people in India who will learn parts of the Rig Veda. And so then again, it's often pointed out that the Rig Veda was clearly and remains a sacred text learned with the care that comes with that, that you regard the text as sacred and to be transmitted faithfully. And
So especially religious texts then can be preserved orally for a long time. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and that's not quite the situation we have with the Eddic poems, which are not religious texts in the same way that the liturgical texts of the Rig Veda are. And also after the conversion to Christianity, they would no longer have this function as a sacred religious text to be transmitted faithfully, if they ever did have such a function. So a skeptic would say that this example is not that helpful. But still, again, it's very common for ancient and medieval texts that the manuscripts we have are centuries younger than the generally accepted dating of the texts themselves. So this is not at all an unusual problem or an insurmountable problem. But again, it's not a bad starting point for the discussion that the manuscripts date from the 13th century. So what arguments do we have for thinking that the texts are older than that, that the Eddic poems are older than that? And one argument might be that Snorri Sturluson quotes parts of the Eddic poems in his Edda, and he does seem to regard them as valid old sources on the...
So in the early 13th century,
right,
he believed them to be ancient at that time.
He certainly seems to have believed so.
Which makes it hard to believe that they were composed at his time, because then he would have known about it.
Right. Then you have to assume that this is all some, I don't know, elaborate bluff that he is in on or something like that.
There was no moon landing.
There was. It was so fake, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not quite that level of conspiracy, I'm not sure. But it is, I guess you could compare it to a conspiracy theory that this was all composed by Snorri and his associates in the 12th and 13th centuries. But all right, so in the 13th century, the sources we have certainly imply that these are old poems, that these are old pagan poems, valid sources of the pre-Christian worldview. That's certainly the way they're used by Snorri Sturluson.
Yeah, that's the point made by Preben Melgner Sørensen, I remember, that there's no reference in the mythological poems, no reference to Christianity or Christian habits, anything like that.
Right, the content of the poems. I mean, we could start with that a little bit, because certainly the poems seem to describe a pre-Christian society. So we have the heroic poems and we have the mythological poems. And again, they don't have references to Christianity. They have many references to the pre-Christian religion. And also they have references to old burial customs and things like that. So for example, when you say... In the Hávamál, a reference is to you should praise a woman when she is burnt or cremated. That assumes that, so the context is you should praise the day in the evening, so when it is over, you should praise a woman when she is cremated, when she is dead, and you know the entirety of her life, then it's safe to praise her. But this assumes that cremation is a normal practice, but which is certainly was not in 13th century Iceland, not at all. So it is a practice that ceased with conversion to Christianity.
Yeah.
So the content of the poem certainly usually implies a pre-Christian society. But there are also other reasons to think the poems are old. And if you think the... again, you could say, well, maybe these are all antiquarian poems, so someone in the 12th or 13th century is sort of reimagining the pagan past and what it might have been like, and might have some knowledge of pagan customs and maybe make some stuff up and so on. And of course, that's not impossible, but there are other reasons also to that maybe are more concrete or may feel more solid to think the poems are old, are centuries old when they were recorded in the Codex Regius in the 13th century in Iceland. And so I'm a linguist by training, and so I've chiefly looked at this question from a linguistic and metrical perspective, so metrics, so the mechanism of poetry. And this is where comparative linguistics comes into play. So we can see archaic traits in the Attic poems that are comparable with Old English and Old High German and so on. But also we can do an internal comparison with other Norse material, because we have another genre of Old Norse poetry, which is skaldic poetry.
Exactly.
And this is very helpful for any dating discussion, because the Attic poems are anonymous. They the manuscripts mention no authors, except, well, Snorri in Gylfaginning implies maybe the works of the Æsir, the gods themselves. But certainly no human authors are mentioned for the Attic poems.
So anonymous, like the ballads, Folkevisa.
Yeah, exactly. They're often thought of as a sort of folk poetry, and they are to some extent probably. But also, if we get into this discussion a bit, some of them do feel like they have a very sort of authorial voice. For example, Heimskviða, about Thor's adventures when he is seeking a cauldron. And that is a poem with some sort of, feels like a very definite style. The author sort of delights in these grotesque, complex images. It doesn't really sort of have the feel of folk poetry to me. But we're getting a bit off track, maybe. So they are anonymous, at least in this simple sense, that we know no authors. But skaldic poetry is different in that the poems, the stanzas, are attributed to named poets, skalds, that were working for particular kings that were ruling
as propagandists for the kings.
Yeah, quite so. Yeah, don't take everything at face value that you hear about in a skaldic poem. But actually, as propaganda, they may be of questionable effectiveness, at least to modern ears, in that all skaldic poetry sort of aims to portray the king as this sort of heroic, fierce, Viking Age style warrior. So even after conversion to Christianity, the skalds are still talking in these terms of this rather harsh ideals of kingship. The king is killing people, even innocent people, not necessarily warriors, sometimes just some farmers, apparently, and he is burning villages. And this is one of the fascinating parts, I think, of skaldic poetry, is that it continues to operate on this sort of Viking Age ideology, even when composing about 12th and 13th century Christian kings.
The king is feeding wolves and ravens.
Exactly.
What a great king this is.
What a great king it is! He's killing all these people. He's burning down these villages, so you even have one of the most fascinating examples of this to me is in the 13th century when you have Sturla Þórðarson, Snorri Sturluson's nephew. He's writing Hákonarsa about Hákon Hákonarson, king of Norway and Iceland and other places, and in the prose he's describing the king as this merciful Christian ruler. But in his poetry, which he also includes in Isaiah, it's again this sort of Viking Age ideal of feeding the wolves. But anyway, that's skaldic poetry. And skaldic poetry goes quite far back. So it goes back to certainly the 10th century and even the 9th century. So we have poems, skaldic poems, that are attributed to particular poets of, for example, Hákon Jarl, ruler of Norway in the late 10th century. And he had a number of court poets, apparently, who were composing these propaganda poems again for him. Also portray him as this pagan ruler. So these are very, this is very pagan poetry. So in particular, the best known and one we have most of, Vetlekla by Einar Skálagrím, a very interesting, very genuinely pagan poem.
Yeah.
And so, again, then this is, no one seriously doubts, for example, that Vatlakla really was composed in 10th century pagan Norway.
Vatlakla with a Norwegian pronunciation.
Right, we can do...
Vatlakla in Icelandic, that's fine.
Yes, in Icelandic or maybe in Sognafjorden or some Norwegian dialect. Mm. But I tend to give Icelandic pronunciation of Old Norse words, but it's of course very valid also to use a Norwegian or reconstructed Old Norse pronunciation. That can be very, very useful as well. But there we are, and I think that's a good starting point. We have these poems, Vatlakla from the 10th century, and even Ragnarstrapa, scaldic poetry from the 9th century. Yeah. So that's probably the very oldest Old Norse poetry we have. And that's also with pagan content, you might say. That has mythological and heroic content and an extremely archaic language and style. You can see sort of the development of the chief skaldic meter, Drottkvæð, by seeing how much this poem, this oldest poem, differs from the ones that followed it.
So Drottkvæð, with a reconstructed pronunciation.
Drottkvæð, something like that, yes. So, yes, and that's a good starting point for thinking about epic poetry. We have all this skaldic poetry that is generally from the 10th century, from pagan times, and that was preserved orally in Norway and in Iceland for 200 years or so until it was written down. And it was written down, the sources we have are chiefly the sagas of the kings. So when it came to writing the histories of the Norwegian kings and Danish kings, historical sources, which were most highly prized, are the skaldic poems, because these were contemporary sources. And of course, they are propagandistic sources, but the authors of the sagas were aware of that. And even Snorri famously comments on this in his Heimskringla, that you have to... assume that the poems were performed before the king, and of course keep that in mind, but it still doesn't mean they are just empty lies, because no skald would tell the king of events that clearly had not happened. That wouldn't be much of a praise, that would be mockery. So there we are. We have these skaldic poems preserved for 200 years orally, and then preserved in manuscript transmission after that. Or at least that's the sort of standard conception. So we don't know exactly when people began to write skaldic poetry down. It might have been earlier than we know. Of course, all the sources are 13th century manuscripts, but it's nothing to say that they didn't already in the 12th century write some of this down. It's also conceivable that some of this was written down with the runic alphabet at some point. So we do have some individual skaldic stanzas written on rune stones and on runic material in Bergen.
A few Eddic stanzas from Bryggen and Bergen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So certainly, we don't know exactly the exact details of the transmission history of the Attic or Skaldic poems. So some runic notes might have been involved at some point, some early long-lost writing in the Latin alphabet might have been as well. But the point is, we clearly have Skaldic poetry preserved from the 10th century into the 13th and 14th century manuscripts we have preserved. And no one really seriously contests this, I believe. So we can use these skaldic poems as a sort of window into these earlier times and into also the development of poetic style and poetic language.
Yeah, which is the essential point here for the dating of the Eddic poems.
Yeah, exactly. So language is always changing, and style is always changing as well, as you...
Like cars...
Yeah, exactly.
People can tell, looking on the street, this is a car from the 50s, this is a car from the 70s, because fashions change, styles change.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same with poetry. You can tell with poets by modern authors, is something written in the late 19th century or mid-20th century. So it's a very different styles and fashion. Yeah. And also, even today, the language is always changing a little bit. So, and it's the same with...
So slang from when I grew up, if I use that, my kids will laugh. Because that was the way to speak back then when you wanted to be cool, but now it's just out of fashion.
Exactly. Now it's not used anymore. Maybe even a bit laughable.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and it's like that in any time period. Things go in and out of fashion. And language develops. And it develops in a way that we believe we largely understand. So, and we have a good... we're in a good position to understand the development of Old Norse, even in the preliterary period, because we have runic inscriptions, we have comparisons with the Old English, with other Germanic languages, with the later Scandinavian dialects and languages. So we have a lot of information to sort of map out the development of Old Norse over time. And that's that comes in use when looking at dating criteria of a linguistic nature. So again, I mentioned the earliest skaldic poems, so Ragnarstrápa and like Vetlekla and other poems from the 9th and 10th centuries. And we can look at linguistic traits in these poems that are become obsolete in the following centuries. So we can distinguish 10th century skaldic style and language from 11th and 12th century skaldic style and language. And what we would like to do with the linguistic dating of Eddic poetry is to bring some of this knowledge obtained from skaldic poetry and other comparative sources.
Yeah, knowledge about how the skaldic poetry changed, how the style of the skaldic poetry changed.
Exactly, how the style and language of the skaldic poetry changes. And apply that to the Attic poems. So, and there are a number of linguistic dating criteria that have been proposed on this basis. So, most famously and perhaps most usefully is the so-called expletive particle or filler word or of particle. So it has many names and they're all a bit problematic. So I'm going to be using filler word here. For now, but just take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. It's not entirely an empty filler, but it appears to us as mostly a one-syllable word, either or of, that can fill one that is useful for filling one syllable in a poem.
Yeah, and, but it doesn't. Maybe it means it has some semantic function, but it's quite close to like in English today. Some people say you know all the time, even not with much meaning in it.
Right. So it seems to have a not very strong semantic function at the in the poems we are concerned with. So, again, you can go into lots of nuances here. So this is actually usually thought of as the remains of Germanic prefixes. You know how German has a lot of unstressed prefixes, like be and ge. And Old Norse gradually lost this sort of thing. And this filler word is sort of the remnant of these stressless prefixes. But that's the etymology. And again, a case where a comparison with the neighboring languages is useful for us to understand the development. But all right, let's call it a filler word with this caveat that it's originally, of course, it meant something. And even in these poems, it may have some semantic function still. But the point is, in the oldest skaldic poems, there's a lot of this filler word. It occurs relatively frequently. And then we see in the 11th century, it's not so frequent anymore. It's a quite a sort of striking drop in its usage. 12th century, even less frequent. And then it's sort of, it's basically gone out of use by the 13th century. So, and we have quite a large corpus of skaldic poetry to base these observations on. So we have many poems from the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th centuries. So we can have a pretty good idea. There's no poet in the 12th or 13th century that uses this a lot. There are some that don't seem to use it at all. There are some that occasionally use it, but no one seems to be using it heavily at that time. And then we look at the oldest skaldic poems, and then the rule is, on the other hand, just about everyone seems to use this quite frequently. And after this, after establishing this skaldic chronology, we look at the Attic poems. And so do the Attic poems have a lot of this filler word? And it turns out most of them do have quite a lot of it. So not all. And there may be several reasons for this. So one is that it has some function in the poetry. It fills out a position. It's a syllable in the poems. And it may depend on the meter, on what sort of composition you're dealing with, how necessary these fillers are. So you have to use this with a little bit of caution. But still, there are very important results here. So key mythological poems, so Völuspá and Hávamál, Völuspá, Hávamál.
Yeah.
Try to. And Þrymskviða have a high frequency of this particle filler word. And so, what does that tell us? I mean, prima facie, it seems to be an argument that these poems are old. They have this archaic linguistic trait. So, and again, we started with this background that the poems seem to be regarded as old in the 13th century. They describe things, a society that seems to be pre-Christian. And then we add this maybe more solid linguistic criterion that they have also archaic language in this case.
And there's more examples of that than this filler word.
Yes, exactly. So this is a very convenient example because it is so the development is so clear in skaldic poetry. We have so many instances of this in the pre-Christian skaldic poems, and we have so few in the post-conversion poems. So the very conveniently, the time when it seems to be changing coincides with this time period which we are quite interested in, the conversion period. So again, for someone who wants to know, is this composed in pagan times or in Christian times, the filler word seems to be a good clue to that. But it's not the only linguistic criterion. So there are others that have been known, even in the 19th century, they were already debating this. And one criterion that was proposed is in archaic, well, in some Old Norse poems, there are words that start with VR. So there are at least three words that are important here. So there's vreyr, angry, vrangr, so wrong, and vreka. So avenge, or it can have other meanings as well. And so and this is something we know from comparison with other languages, that these words used to have begin with a V. So and we can still see this in Danish or
yeah, so in Eastern Scandinavia the V was retained.
Yes.
So in Norwegian we have both variants, and so Vrang or rang, you find both or hear both forms in the dialects.
Exactly. So that seems to be the dividing line. So in Swedish, in Danish, in some Norwegian dialects, so the V is retained in at least some words.
But then we also have the confusion caused by spelling pronunciation because there are influence from the Danish written language.
Yes, of course. So if you look at older Norwegian, the basic pattern here is that Icelandic and Norwegian and Faroese, the West Norse languages lost this V entirely in these words. And this, interestingly, happened very early on. So
how early would you say?
So even in the oldest Icelandic manuscripts, dating from the 12th century, or the oldest Norwegian manuscripts, it is quite gone. And we can also see
you
this.
Mean the language written?
Exactly.
Contemporary language, there was no V anymore.
There's no V anymore. And so what we can see in the poetry, on the other hand, and this is where alliteration comes into play, because we have this alliteration, where the in the poems the same letter or initial consonantism is found in different words in the line. So we have alliterating pairs of two or three words. So one word starts with a V and another word must start with a V as well. So like we have vega and vreidur. So both words begin with a V, and we can see this, that it must be so in some stanzas, in some poems. And this is actually, and interestingly, it's not like that in the manuscripts. So in the Codex Regius of the Attic Poems, this VR is never written out, and the scribe may not have known about this at all.
Yeah, he may have thought that there was no rhyme, there was no alliteration, because
exactly.
In his pronunciation, the V before R was gone.
Exactly. So when he writes Reidir Vega, to him, it's probably just a defective line. There's, for some reason, no alliteration. But we can reconstruct the V based on this historical comparison with English, German, East Scandinavian. Yeah. So we know, obviously it must have been Vreidr Vega when the poem was composed.
Yeah, because otherwise there would be no alliteration, which we should expect.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know the alliteration is very regular in the Attic poems and the Skaldic poems as well. And this is, again, a case where the Skaldic chronology is very helpful, in that we have some Skaldic instances of this, where this initial VR must be assumed for these metrical reasons because of alliteration. And these poems are all pre-Christian. So here we're talking 9th and 10th century poems. So after 1000, we have no datable Skaldic poem that uses this alliteration, because it just it had changed in the language and it had done so quite completely, apparently. So no Icelandic or Norwegian poem that we know post 1000 is there a VR.
Right. So when Thrymskviða opens with the phrase Reidr var svo vingþór er hann vaknaði, it means that it must be, or it's very implausible, improbable that it's post conversion.
Right. So I mean, certainly it seems to be a reason to believe that the poem may be pre-Christian. Yes. So so one reason to look at this, well, one way to look at this is that here we have another dating criterion. That we began with the filler word, now we have this VR criterion, and they fit together very well. So the poems that have the VR, they also have a lot of filler words. And here you can also do the criterion both ways. So when you're alliterating with these words as if they begin with R, that's then a younger trait. And we can see there are a couple of Attic poems that use that alliteration. And those are the heroic poems Gripisspal and Atlamál. Atlamál. Mm-hmm. And those, again, use this younger alliteration, and they also have few filler words. So there we have two apparently independent reasons to believe they are relatively young. So presumably post-conversion, 11th century, 12th century, something like that.
Yeah.
So some Attic poems then seem to, from a linguistic point of view, to be young. There are also maybe stylistic reasons to believe that Atlamál and Gripisspal are relatively young poems. And in any case, those are not the sort of core poems you may be interested in for sources for Old Norse religion.
Yeah, so that would be the mythological poems.
Exactly. And so none of the mythological poems have these clear signs of being young. Quite the contrary. So the VR, for example, is prominent in Lokasenna, which also has many filler words and other archaic traits, archaic negations, and other things we're not going to get into here. But so from a linguistic point of view, there's every reason to believe that the Lokasenna is a pre-Christian poem. And I think this is quite interesting. So from a literary point of view, or from well, if you look at the content of the poem, that has been quite controversial.
Some argue that both Strömskvida and Lokasena must be post-conversion because they give this really not very flattery image of the gods, so it must be Christian blasphemy.
Right. Yes, that's one idea, and this has always surprised me a little bit, because when we compare with poems from other cultures, such as the ancient Greek and Roman cultures, so we have like in the Odyssey and the Iliad and in other Greek-Roman sources, mm-hmm. we have stories about the gods that are often not very flattering at all.
So yeah, there's incest, and they're eating their children, and all kinds of nasty things.
Right, there's a lot of violent and sometimes patsy behavior from the gods, and Zeus is sleeping around, and there's so much thing going on. Some of it, it reminds us perhaps of Lokasena.
Yeah, it's important to not be the Christian god is not a typical god in comparative religion view. It's we have to remember that.
Right. So again, this reason for thinking these poems are young has never really resonated with me. But again, I'm a linguist, so I'm mostly considering this from a linguistic perspective. From that perspective, I think there are good reasons to believe that Lokasena is an old poem from the 10th century, perhaps even older than that. It's from a linguistic point of view, I think it's one of the very most archaic poems.
Right. So, are they Icelandic?
Well, yeah, that's another great question. So again, from the point of view of this, of starting with the manuscripts, when you start with, okay, we have these epic poems in this Codex Regius manuscript, which is an Icelandic manuscript from the 13th century. So some scholars like to start with that as the departure point. So these are Icelandic 13th century poems. But if you look at the content of the poems, that often, to me, does not fit very well. So Havamál in particular is an example where you really do seem to be in Norway. The circumstances described, landscape, none of it it reminds me of Iceland. It seems to be
pine trees.
Yes, and there are these bautasteinars, these memorial stones that were never apparently a fashion in Iceland, and there are these again references to archaic burial costumes, and so 13th century Iceland is just really not the impression you get from reading Havamál. Certainly, the author is in their mind in Norway, and I think quite probably that the poem is composed in Norway, that it is a Norwegian 10th century composition, or again, so with Havamál, the unity of the poem is often questioned. So is it actually several poems that have been combined into one? But certainly, a lot of it is really redolent of Norway.
Right. Yeah.
And again, so I think we can discuss this pretty soberly for the most part. But of course, this sort of thing often gets sort of tied up into sort of national ambition.
So
we have maybe in the past, particularly.
We used to do the Norwegians used to claim the whole Old Norse literature, which of course is nonsense.
Right. So and then we have the Icelanders that want to sort of claim as much of it as possible, that it's all composed in Iceland and so on. But I think we really know that it wasn't so. So for example, the one epic poem that is attributed to a particular country is Atlamál, which it says in the manuscript in Grænlensku, in Grønlensku, the Greenlandic poem about Atli, which was presumably composed in Greenland, perhaps in 12th century Greenland. And certainly the content of the poem sort of feels somewhat like Greenland. So it seems like there are a few people, and then there's a long distance between them, and there are polar bears.
Yeah.
So most scholars, I think, do believe that it was composed in Greenland.
Yeah. How wonderful that something like that is preserved.
It's very interesting. And a lot, of course, is preserved in Greenland. So the archaeology of Norse Greenland is very interesting, because the conditions there often have preserved things much better than in Iceland, for example. So we have many very interesting archaeological and runological finds as well from Greenland.
Right, yeah. Okay, I guess we should stop there, Haukur. Haukur Thorgeirsson at the Árni Magnússon Institute in Reykjavík. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
Du har nå hørt en podcast fra Høgskolen på Vestlandet. For å høre flere podcaster, besøk hvl.no/podcast.